You are listening to Bicycle Retail Radio, brought to you by the National Bicycle Dealers Association.
Welcome to another episode of Bicycle Retail Radio, brought to you by the MBDA. This is President Heather Mason. Thank you for listening. We're so happy you're here. If you are a first-time listener, be sure to check out our previous episodes. Do us a favor, leave a review. It helps members of our industry find our podcast. I'm super pumped about today's guest. We have Scott Holtz, Senior Program Manager at Specialized Bicycles. During his 13 years at Specialized, he progressed from SBCU instructor to brand strategist and then a manager of a global team before moving into his current role as Senior Program Manager for the brand's single largest market. He has created brand strategies and directives for a global network of over 3,000 independent retail partners. I connected with Scott back in June to brainstorm a podcast discussion around retailers offering fit services and how these services can elevate your retail environment and experience. I can't wait to get into the discussion. I want to warmly welcome Scott to Bicycle Retail Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course, Heather. Thanks so much for having me. This is a pleasure.
You can tell I'm excited because I got a little tongue-tied with your intro there. I mean, you have so much experience in the industry. And it's funny, I was chatting with a retailer earlier, Whit Ellerman from Cardinal Bicycle in Roanoke, Virginia. You know, he is showing me his new location. He just remodeled a beautiful new fit room. And I'm telling him about the podcast today. He's like, oh, he's coming here in October. I know him. I was like, what?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah, Whit and his staff, as they're building out the new fit studio, they've been part of our retool education program this last year. So I've been working with him really closely in terms of training the staff and getting them prepared to be able to offer retool fitting in that new location. It's been super fun. So yeah, I am going to go out and see the final product and follow up with the staff a little bit later in the fall.
You've been in the industry for so long, and you know, I want to give a special note of thanks. George Lee, who was on the podcast earlier, introduced us following that conversation. And your background and career are so impressive. And I'm sure, you know, I want to tell our listeners that are listening, get the notepads out. I always like to, before we move forward, get to know a little bit more about your background, let our listeners know a little bit more. And I always like with a very basic question, like, how did you get started in the bicycle industry?
Oh boy. Well, first of all, George Lee is one of my favorite people. So that's really cool that that connection happened. Yeah, and he's also a tough act to follow. So I'm glad that his podcast was a little while ago. Now, I mean, seriously, in all seriously, cycling for me, it was kind of an accident in a lot of ways, but I very much have a specific couple things that I feel have really gotten to me or gotten me to where I ended up, you know, and I never planned this. I mean, I think that's the crazy part, right? A lot of the things that happen in life, you don't plan them. I was a competitive swimmer from when I was a little tiny kid through high school. And one night I was done. I couldn't stare at the black line at the bottom of the pool any longer, and it was over. And that was when I was a junior in high school, and I got out of the pool, and I honestly have never swam another training lap ever since then. That's just how burned out I was. But I wasn't done being an athlete. So back in that day, there was a show called CBS Wide World of Sports, and it showed sports from around the world that weren't football, baseball, or basketball back then. And I saw this, I had a little brief snippet of Paris-Roubaix. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I had no idea what that meant, you know, but I was just hooked. I was like, I just want to race a bicycle. And so I started riding. And by the time I got to college, I found out that our college had a cycling team. So that was it. I became a cyclist through my college years and racing, and was really just obsessed by bicycles and racing bicycles. I also graduated college with a history degree in pre-revolutionary Russian. Yeah, right. So a pre-revolutionary Russian history degree. And that leads you to only a couple places. One is teaching, and the other one was law school. So literally the morning that I was going to take the LSAT, I decided I don't want to be a lawyer, and I'm going to keep riding my bike. Mom and dad were thrilled. But what it meant was that I stayed in the bike industry and worked retail for the next 18 years. So I just fell in love with the industry, and I fell in love with bicycles. And I think what happened, I met a man named Clay Mankin, who is the founder of City Cycle in San Francisco. And he showed me, through just being a great mentor and just a great all-around retailer, he said, I don't own a bike shop. I own a specialty retail store. And he said, the bike industry, it can be better. And one of the ways it can be better is through offering custom services and custom experiences to our riders that you can't get elsewhere. And Clay set a standard in my mind of what bicycle specialty retail should be. And I've been trying to live up to that ever since.
Scott, this story, it is so true, right? You never know where your journey is going to take you. And if you keep following your passions, you're going to end up in the right spot. But you could never predict that when you're swimming in the pool, when you're in high school or studying, I don't even know, Russian. where are you going? But I'm glad you're here.
Well, I think I got lucky because I didn't know at the time. Yeah, I had no idea, of course, you know, where I was headed. And I came from a teaching family. My father was a professor and a teacher, and I never in a million years thought that I'd get to lead that life, but also be doing it in the bike industry, not in academia or in school or whatnot.
I consider myself extremely lucky to be doing a profession that I love. And I can see, you know, you seem like you're glowing over there, you know, talking about Clay. How did you make the jump from working in the retail environment to working with Specialized? How did that come along?
Yeah, so I was working at a shop in Manhattan called Signature Cycles. And it was, you know, I'd been, like I said, it's been my 18th year of retail, and Signature was really kind of the epitome of what the fitting business could and can be. It was a shop that was based solely on bike fits and then creating custom bikes from those fits. Proof positive that, you know, fitting itself is a substantial business in and of itself, and let alone when you put it inside of a functioning retail location. But I also felt like I'd kind of taken that as far as it could go. I mean, I was working in one of the most beautiful fit locations I could possibly be in. Our average unit price was $8,000, even back in the early 2000s. It was crazy. I was working with Wall Street guys that would come in with black cards, you know, once a week, I'd see a black card. And it was kind of a sign to me, it was like, well, this is great, but where do you go from here? And then I found out that Specialized was starting to teach fitting to its retailers and was working with Dr. Andy Pruitt and the founder of the Boulder Center for Sports Medicine, BCSM. And there was this opportunity to come to Specialized and start to teach fit to retailers. And the reason that partnership worked out so well was that I had the commercial background for understanding how fit works in a retail environment, where Dr. Pruitt totally understood the body and the methodology and how to make riders faster, more comfortable, or less injured. But he worked in a clinic, you know, so it was kind of a perfect marriage. It's like we have the science and the methodology on one side, and then we have the retail commercialization on the other. And so the way we started to work and teach the early days of body geometry fit to retailers was just kind of a natural fit for me at Specialized.
I can't even imagine what you were feeling at that time. I love Signature Cycles. It's a great store. And I did not know that you did work there. But what a time in your life to go from spending, you know, so many years in a retail store to have this opportunity to work for a major player in the industry. And you have the knowledge and the skill set that they need and want to start up this new program. You must have been pumped, right, Scott?
I was so pumped. It was so cool because, you know, it really fit like along the lines of kind of how I'd always been trying to make the industry better in a lot of ways. I was like, when I worked at retail, my mindset, not that I thought about it every day, but my mindset was, hey, we're going to be the best that we can at whatever we're doing, at whatever retailer I worked with. And then, you know, we were trying to kind of raise that level around us in the local market, per se. And then to get the opportunity to come to Specialized and help retailers around first, you know, the country, and then ultimately around the world, up their game and help them and be just a little tiny part of that, was just huge. To me, it's been the greatest opportunity I could have ever imagined.
I have such fond memories of SBCU. I know, like right before we started, you know, off record, we were chatting just a little bit about my history with Specialized. And I remember SBCU as like the first opportunity to really, you know, take a role as a retailer to get someone within your environment trained for fitting and to, you know, to help set up that fit area. I mean, what was it like at that time working in those initial stages with retailers and SBCU and fit? Tell me about that. I can't even imagine.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest things was a lot of people didn't really even understand what fit was. And a lot of people had a lot of different definitions of what fit was. You know, some people were, oh yeah, I do bike fits and it takes me 10 minutes. And then we have other people that I do bike fits and it takes 2 hours. And some people use a plumb bob and some people use, you know, all these different tools. And there's all these different ideas of what fit was. But one of the universal things was almost nobody was making any money at it. So whatever they were doing, you know, it wasn't a service that was leading to anything in the shop. Some were just better at it, I think, than others. And there were a few that had taken it a little bit farther. I mean, especially back then, there, you know, there were still custom bikes being built, and there were some shops and fitters who were using that information to drive their custom fit sales, which, you know, ultimately really, you know, I think that changed a lot over the years as well. But a lot of it first was just trying to make people understand how beneficial the service could be, not only to the rider, of course, but also to the profitability of the shop and how it could fit into the business. The last lecture in the SBCU class for fit was selling fit. I'm like, okay, now I taught you how to do this. Now I'm going to teach you how to like implement this as your business, because nobody understood really how to do that.
I remember there was like fit level one, I think it was fit level two, and don't get upset if I'm giving you the wrong one, but I think that's what it was. But yeah. I remember some retailers got so into it, and we had some retailers like Beth at Cycle Lodge in Pembroke, Mass. Like, she was so thrilled to be able to put that on her wall and say that she was certified. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the growth that you saw with retailers during this time, or even now that you're experiencing, that really get behind fit.
Yeah, well, I mean, even that's a great example. You know, Beth, not only did she go through every level of fit that we had, as a lot of retailers did, the ones who got super into it, there was a period of time where we were offering a certification course, which was literally fitters coming into Morgan Hill and being given a random subject, somebody usually from around the building, to do a fit on with us instructors, and oftentimes, you know, Dr. Pruitt or you know, other pretty famous people around in the fit world watching you and grading you on your fit. And those people that passed that certification back then, that was a really big deal. Beth, of course, was one of them. There were several others. And then a lot of those folks actually came back to SBCU as guest instructors. We would welcome them back to work with other retailers anytime they wanted. That was kind of part of the deal of being certified, was you were literally kind of part of the family now as instructors. I would say, in terms of growth, though, what's really interesting to me now that I've seen through the years is not only have we created more of what a standardization in the industry, so to speak, like when we talk about a bike fit now, way more people have a clear understanding of what that service means, what the results ought to be, like what to expect out of that service, as well as it being almost expected a lot of ways. I always kind of dreamt of this day, but the day when somebody would walk into a bike shop and think it was just as odd that they didn't have a fit studio and a fitter as they would if you walked into a shop and they said, oh, we don't have a mechanic or a work area. I think we're, you know, maybe we're not there 100%, but we're so much closer than we were 10 years ago.
You know, part of the reason I was really looking forward to talking with you, Scott, is that I think for the last couple of months since I started at the MBDA, really getting back into like, let's talk about fit. Let's talk, because I remember it was such an integral part. It changed the dynamics of our shop. I mean, we sold stems and bars, like all this stuff that we didn't normally step. Once we started focusing on fit, the rider experienced everything. So I want to get into all that. And I'm wondering about video capture. Over the years, I feel like, you know, I remember the Serrata size cycle with no video. And now we have video capture. And I remember with SBCU, there was the video capture of the rider during the fitting. Was that always part of SBCU? I couldn't remember. Was that introduced later? Or can you talk to me about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, the technology part, that came just a little bit later. So, and it plays into ultimately how Retool and Specialized ended up joining forces as well. So when I first started teaching body geometry fit, and really the methodology of body geometry fit, there was no technology involved for the retailer. Now, the ironic part was that a lot of the research and a lot of what we understand about the body and the methodology that came from BCSM, from Boulder Sports Medicine, was learned by using a motion capture system called Vicon. But Vicon is a super expensive, very difficult to use motion capture system that is in no way retail friendly. But the knowledge that we gained from understanding how cyclists move on their body really informed the way the body geometry fit evolved. But ironically, we didn't have a tool to use at retail. So we literally had to teach fitters how to look at things with their eyes, how to see things in the rider, the way they were moving, and kind of, you know, little tips and tricks about how do you assess whether a rider is sitting squarely on their saddle or not. Since you don't have a Vicon, here's how you do that. A few years after that, we got the opportunity to work with a company called Silicon Coach out of New Zealand. And they had started to use video capture in a lot of different ways. And they were willing to build a software system just for bike fitting and just for Specialized from the ground up. So we did just that, and we developed what we called the data system. And it was an acronym for something. I'm not sure what, one of those great Specialized acronyms. It was like dual angle something. I don't remember. I'm going to be embarrassed on that one. But basically, it was a two-camera video system, one from the side, one from the front. And it was built specifically for bike fitting. So there were other video capture systems that were out there that were super complex because they were built to do anything from golf to, you know, hockey, field sports, cycling, whatever. But the data system was designed just for bike fitters. And it was really successful for many years. But the one thing that I learned through that process, because I was the project manager for that, was when you don't own all of the technology, trying to keep the system running was incredibly hard. So every time that Sony or Panasonic would change a spec on a video camera, it was like, oh, now we have to redo the, you know, this chunk of the software. Or we went from FireWire to USB, you know, for the signal path, and all of a sudden USB changed everything and made it. So we were just constantly behind the eight ball. And so what I learned out of that was, if you're going to do something from a technology standpoint, you need to own the software development and the hardware if you want to control your own planned or not planned obsolescence, I guess.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
And then that's what eventually led to Retool, because they had figured that out before us.
When was that, Scott? Was that like 2013 or?
Yeah, it was the very end of 2012, beginning of 2013 was when Specialized and Retool merged. And we basically Specialized acquired Retool. And it took a while to figure out, okay, now what do? We got this great brand. Now how do we integrate this into Specialized and how we make this work?
I'm just rewinding here. So I'm thinking, so I'm stuck on the S-ometer. I'm always with the S-ometer with body geometry, because with that, it was a tool that helped us, you know, show to the customer, you know, exactly what they need. They could sit on it and it would measure their sit bones. And the way you just described to me, you know, using video as a tool, it's another tool that we could use to help ensure that we were accurate and you show to the customer as well the accuracy of our fit. Is that what I'm understanding? Am I
totally
making a comparison?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great, there's two points in that are really interesting. One is video capture was really unique in the sense that we never get to see ourselves on our bikes, right? So when you get to see yourself on your bike and you get to see the changes that are made, it becomes way more real. And I think this is where technology and tools in general play such a big part in bike fit, as opposed to just, you know, what I call the eye-ometer of the fitter telling the rider, yeah, you look better. When you have a technology experience, the rider becomes part of that fit and they can see what the changes are. They can understand why you're making the suggestions that you're making. And I think that's the number one thing that's so important, is that they understand the why. Why are you wanting me to make this change? Why should I buy this pair of shoes? Why should I buy this different saddle? And then seeing the results is just another level, as opposed to just feeling the results. Because not everybody feels every change, especially not right away, but sometimes they'll see them. And I think that's a big part of it. And the other thing you mentioned about the other tools, like, you know, the assometer, which was the foam sit bone measuring device, and eventually the archometer, which we had like a thermodynamic film that measures your arch height. The thing that was really interesting about the why body geometry fit came around in the first place was body geometry products. So the body geometry products work best when they're personalized for the rider who's going to use them. And what we realized fairly quickly on was they were choosing the products alone was a complex enough choice that to really help a rider understand what shoes they should get, what saddle, what footbeds, if there's wedging in their shoe, how does that work? That fitting almost became a necessary part of the process to make sure that riders got the right products. And that's really what drove the decision to start to teach fit, was the creation and the evolution of body geometry products Specialized.
So thinking, Scott, about the role that bicycle retailers are playing these days, you know, an integral spot for people to become the future cyclist that they want to be, whether that's, you know, having a fit service done, whether that's visiting the mechanic and having your bike serviced or learning how to do your service on your bike. And going back to Witt, who's, you know, just moved into this beautiful new location. I mean, he's expanding and he's allocating a large area of space just for fit services. Like, where do you feel like in your current role and working with so many retailers that the industry is headed with fit? Or, you know, do you feel like this is a good time to really put some focus on it for retailers?
I think it's a super huge opportunistic time right now. And the reason is because there's so many new riders into the sport. So, I mean, I think one could argue that in the past, fit seemed to, seemed to appeal to the roadie, maybe the triathlete, people who understood it's like, oh, I'm going to perform better by getting a fit. And it was still amazing to me how many, one, either mountain bike riders or just fitness riders, or they weren't even being presented the option to get fit in a store, which I think is a big miss. Now we have, in this particular time period, a huge influx of new riders, all brand new riders, but a lot of them have done their research. Fit's also been around now for quite some time. So people are reading about getting a bike fit, even if they're looking at getting their first new bike, which means that if they're coming to the retailer and that retailer is not offering that service, that rider may be going, well, why? Wait, I'm missing out on something here. So I think that's one aspect of it. The bigger one, the one that just I see every single day riding around Boulder, even in one of the cycling meccas of the country where, you know, people ask me on a Saturday, is there an event going on? And it's like, no, it's just Saturday. But when I look at half those riders, I look at them and they're, I can tell they're relatively new. They've got a new bike and I just want to help them. It's like, oh God, if I could just spend just 10 minutes with you, I could make cycling so much better and so much more fun that you won't quit. Because I think the biggest opportunity, but also the biggest threat we have right now is all these riders, they got all these new bikes. They're out there riding around. And as soon as their knees start hurting, their back starts hurting, they go, wow, cycling's not as fun as I thought it was. That bike gets hung back up in the garage and we lose them. And I know there's retailers out there who will relate to this. It's like, I know every one of you has sold a bike to people and then you've never seen that person again. And you wonder, what happened? Where'd they go? They at least need a tube or something, And I think a large percentage of those people are the people that gave up. And I think fitting is one of the things that absolutely can keep people in the sport. I would far rather fit a brand new rider than a pro. Pro doesn't need me. A pro needs me to go a little tiny bit faster. A new rider needs me to succeed in the sport. And I think that that's a much bigger calling. And I think that's a huge opportunity that all of our retailers have right now.
I could not agree more. And, I'm thinking about like when you want to pull the car over, when you see that cyclist who's not fit right. And then I'm thinking back to when we used to do fit at our store and just the conversations that would evolve and that time for the new cyclist as they're getting to know their bike and their body and figuring out how to shift as well and all the things that are happening during that time. Scott, when I talk to retailers about fit, sometimes I get pushback about we have to train a certain person or I have to dedicate an employee off the sales floor. And do you have any data from your experience, related to fit services and sales per employee hour, anything that I could use as an argument here in this case?
Yeah, for sure. We've actually done quite a bit of research for that now and really have quite a bit of data on like what a successful fit business looks like. So even, targets that people should be shooting for, how do you know when you're doing well? But I think one of the things that was most telling is a few years ago, we did a study where we had a group of shops who were willing to share their information with us. And we had really good, we knew the information was right and they did no fitting whatsoever. So we just looked at daily sales, number of hours, number of employees that were working in the store. And we tracked this for a month. And what we found was that on average, the average retail employee was bringing in $161 of revenue per hour. So every hour that they're on the sales floor, they're bringing in $161 worth of revenue. Then we tracked a group of our shops that were doing fitting at, I wouldn't say the highest level. It wasn't like all of these were rock stars, but they were all making a business out of it. And they were tracking their add-on sales, their hourly, how long they were doing, how long it took to do fits, what that service revenue generated, as well as what the add-on sales was. So this was not even including new bike sales. And what we found is when fitters are fitting, on average, they're bringing in about $425 an hour. So over 2.5 times the hourly revenue. So when somebody says, I can't afford to have my salesperson off the sales floor, I have to question that because when a fitter is fitting per hour as the normal shop employee.
That is significant data to have in a, wow. I figured you probably knew something like that. So I've been thinking about from a space requirement standpoint, I mean, it makes perfect sense then as well. It really nulls the argument if you can get behind it and really focus on it.
Yeah. And there's two points you bring up. So there's a couple things. fitting it, and I've told so many people this, fitting is not, you know, like Kevin Costner, build it and they will come kind of thing. It takes time. You have to build your fit studio. It has to be appealing. You're going to probably tweak it a couple times to make it work for the space. You know, it's not always a slam dunk right out of the box. It takes time to build the reputation and it takes time to build that into your business. So it's like, it's a commitment. And so it's a commitment that retailers need to make and also the people in the shop need to make to that space. But when it works, and this is another piece of data that's much more recent, I mean, it just kind of finished up on this not long ago, was in our tier one retailers, I put together a list of about 4,000 SKUs, 4,000, you know, pieces of equipment that almost every one of our shops is going to have. So it basically consisted of shoes and saddles and footbeds, did not consist of clothing. It was more or less just kind of hard goods. And again, about 4,000 items. Of those 4,000 pieces of equipment, the shops that do really, really well with fit sell twice the equipment that the shops that just do okay with fit. And they sell six times the number of equipment dollars than the shops that don't do any fitting. So when you start to think about, like you were saying, you know, that fitter that sells saddles and stems and handlebars and all the stuff that starts to get sold in your fit area, and you start to calculate that income per square footage of that fit studio versus the grips and handlebar tape that might be on that wall, you can start to justify, like, what part of the shop is going to bring in how much money.
Yeah, it was almost impossible to do a fit without selling something. And usually there was an upgrade that happened on the shoes they were wearing or something else, because as you're having those conversations to enhance the experience, there are items that exist that do just that. And it's an amazing time to do that.
Yeah. And like I said, it's the why. It's telling the rider why, you know, and I think that's what it really comes down to, is them understanding, oh, that's why I should get this. This is how it's going to help me. And once they understand that, then it's, you create a relationship built on trust that rider is now going to have with that retailer.
Scott, I just want to stay here for a second because you've used the term body geometry a couple of times. I have. We both know it, but maybe we have some listeners who don't know what body geometry is. Can you just rewind and give us a little definition of that and speak to the why of body geometry, which I think you already did, but just to be sure.
Yeah, well, body geometry products just started at Specialized in a really organic way back in the late 1990s. The first body geometry product was a saddle that was designed to make sure that especially male cyclists were not impeding blood flow on a saddle and causing long-term damage attributed to cycling and erectile dysfunction. I mean, that's where it started. It was like, hey, we have a problem. Can we solve it and make cycling safer and better for everybody? And that was really the premise of what body geometry became. It started in a totally organic way around one product, and then it became a way of thinking. So the idea behind body geometry products Specialized is, you know, understand a problem, design products that are going to solve that problem, and then the most important part is validate that it actually works. And so, you know, body geometry has gone through a few different taglines: ergonomically designed, scientifically tested, you know, now to today's, which is identify a problem, design around it, and validate it with science. But ultimately, that's truly what sets it apart, is that we can look at the data, we can prove that a body geometry shoe reduces your medial lateral knee travel, which also reduces the chance of knee injury. You know, and that's how Specialized approaches the body geometry product line, is if it's going to wear that logo, wear that badge of honor of body geometry, it means that we looked at a problem, created and prototyped sometimes hundreds of designs, and then scientifically validate that they actually work. There's been a lot of times when product managers have brought a body geometry product to me, because I am on, you know, kind of the approval board, or at least I was in the past. Currently, it's not my role, but, and they bring a pair of body geometry socks. And I'm like, oh, really? What did those do? Well, one's left and one's right. And I'm like, no, that's not a body geometry product.
I love it. I love, you know, like I say, I think revolutionized the industry, the saddles, the gloves, the shoes, as you speak of. Flipping back over to fit, and, you know, I'm sure you've trained a great deal of people on fitting. I'm thinking about, you know, as I mentioned earlier, those conversations that are happening when you're having a fit with someone. And I think a stumbling block for retailers is, who do we train to fit? And is it one person? And what is the personality of that person? What characteristics are we looking for? Can you speak to, like, in your mind, I guess, or, you know, for retailers thinking about who their next fitter is, what are we looking for?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, and something retailers really, really should consider when they're talking about investing in the person or people who are going to be your fitters.
Have you heard of P2 groups and wondered what they are? P2 stands for the Profitability Project. And while profitability is at the focus of everything we do so much more. P2 group members share their expertise and their insights. They ask questions and they exchange resources to make sure every member is profitable and successful in every aspect of bike shop ownership. Reach out today so we can tell you more.
First of all, I think that when you're thinking about that, a shop should always be thinking about two people, always. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is an obvious one. You might have turnover or something happens. And if that one person leaves and your entire fit program leaves with that one person, then you're just starting over again. And that's not good. The other aspect is that those two fitters, they should really share clients. And that way the rider builds a relationship with the shop and with the fit protocol that that shop offers, as well as the fitters. But it's not 100% relationship between rider and fitter, because again, that rider and fitter goes down the street and then maybe that clientele moves with them. So from just a purely business standpoint, it's far better to have more than one fitter in your store. Not to mention, you can offer more fits. I mean, it's like, you know, it's so there's lots of reasons to have more than one. When possible, absolutely having different types of fitters is super important. I love shops that have both, you know, male and female fitter. Different riders are going to be more comfortable maybe with one fitter or the other. I mean, just different personalities. But, you know, I've seen also that in the business, like we mentioned, Beth Mills, a lot of our women fitters are some of the most high in demand fitters in the country. It seems that, you know, the female fitting profession is just huge and they're very much in demand. So if you are a retailer who can make sure you have multiple fitters on your staff and be able to bring in a fitter that's a male and another one's a female or two female, I mean, you're doing amazing. The other thing is just, you got to have people who are super comfortable talking with people. Fitting is a relationship building experience in the shop. A person has to be comfortable touching people, has to be comfortable working with feet and shoes and, you know, working with people, like very closely working with people. And I think you also have to think about your client base and making sure that, you know, realizing that this is a reasonably intimate service, they need to be comfortable with the person who you're presenting to represent your shop. So it goes both ways. You know, the fitter has to be comfortable with clients, but the clients have to be really comfortable with your fitters. So, you know, I think that the best fitters are people, you know, I mean, it's like they like people. I think that's what it comes down to. And I think the last thing is that you need people who realize that fit is all about the rider. The rider that's in front of you, that is the single most important person in the room. And I think avoiding the ego that sometimes comes with some fitters that I've seen, that's huge, because it's not about me. It's not about what I think about how great of a fitter I am to fit you and fit you on your bike. That's not what it's about. It's about you here today in front of me. How am I going to help you achieve your goals? And I always like to say, you know, I mean, with cyclists, the two things we like to talk about the most are ourselves and ourselves on a bike.
Right.
So, right. So when a rider comes into your fit studio, your job is to listen to them about them being on their bike. And if you do that really well, and you understand what it is that makes them want to be a cyclist of any type, it doesn't matter if they're a commuter or a pro, and you address those issues that they're concerned about, you're going to do really well.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So empathy, you know, yep. A good composure, charismatic, like these are all things, right? I have in my notes from when we first spoke, and I hope I didn't miswrite this down, but I think I got it. You said clockwise fit versus counterclockwise. Can you remind me what we were talking about there? Because I was like, I think I wrote this right.
Yeah, that's a way that I kind of, a term I've used to describe the way that the fit business can work in a retail scenario. And it doesn't have to be an either or, it can be a combination of both. But what that means is that a clockwise presentation of fit within a business is kind of the way you think it goes. Somebody comes in with a bike, or they've bought a bike just recently, or they're buying a bike today. And then they bought that bike for all the right reasons. It's the right color, it's the right price, it's the one their friend liked, whatever those choice decisions were made. And now it's being presented to a fitter to make sure that that bike works, or to make that bike work the best that it can. And so now the bike's already been chosen, so I have to work within what I have. And now I'm also working with this rider to maybe upgrade saddle or change a stem and change a handlebar. And now we're going to make this bike work the best it can, all the while hoping that it's the right bike and that we make sure that they're comfortable and happy and they go out and ride. So that's, and I call it clockwise just simply because that's the more common way that bike fit exists within a shop. Counterclockwise fit is kind of the reverse of that. It's where we use the fit process to make the product selections before that rider's committed to anything. It's like they're using the fitting process to make those decisions of what's best for them. And the interesting thing is that 90% of the time, that is a far more profitable way to sell a bike or to get a rider into cycling, because you're going through all of the elements that they need to succeed, and they're understanding why they're choosing each one of those components as they go, why they need a different saddle, or why we're going to recommend a certain pair of shoes or pedals. But it all just ends up being the final package, and they're good to go. And they also know that they're good to go. And I think that that's that peace of mind that people are always willing to pay a little bit more for, and they made the right choice on the product. Again, both of those can live simultaneously in a shop. It's just understanding that the counterclockwise one is almost always going to sell more equipment and probably a higher price bike.
I was just going to say that I remember speaking with some shops who said, we're fit first. We start with the fit. We don't even talk about the bike until we know what bike you're going to fit, because why have the conversation about the bike if you're not going to fit it, right? So, and I feel like those shops always sold, you know, the more expensive bike. You know, maybe because during the process, the customer got so much more into it, maybe, like, you know, they felt more attached to the choices along the way. So you're saying there's not one that's better than the other, possibly, Scott? Are you kind of like even here? Or
I think it's an understanding of how they work and which one's going to fit more into your business, and understanding, you know, the pros and cons of either one. I mean, I would say that right now in the industry that we have today and with the retailers that I'm working with on a daily basis, where the odds that somebody is ordering a bike that they have not yet seen are very high. Mm-hmm. And that's probably going to continue for a while. Giving them the peace of mind that they have ordered the right bike, as well as giving the retailer the peace of mind knowing I ordered the right bike and that it's not going to be a surprise when this bike comes in and may or doesn't work as well as I thought it would be. This is a perfect opportunity for retailers to start to engage in that counterclockwise type of fitting if they haven't before, because there's just so many bikes that are on order right now. And so to make sure that you actually ordered the right thing, is this is a great opportunity to make fewer mistakes for sure.
Yeah, especially when we have people waiting on these long wait times. So,
I mean, if you're waiting 2 months for your bike and then it's not the right size.
Yeah. So with Retool, Scott, and I've used it just a couple times, but I'm sure we probably have some listeners who maybe have no experience whatsoever. In my thinking, you could do a fit with a customer and then all the geometry numbers from many brands are in Retool. Is that correct? And we'll give you a recommendation based on the fit numbers. Is that how it works, Scott?
Yeah, sort of.
Sorry, I'm not quite sure. Help us here.
That's basically what Retool is. It is not like going to recommend specialized bikes. You know, that's not how it works. And it's basically essentially what we can do with Retool's. If you're doing a counterclockwise fit and you're using a tool like the Move, which is an infinitely adjustable bike, you can create any bike you want based on the specs that you get off of a website. So if I want to, on a Move, create a Pinarello and a Specialized and a Cervelo, I can do that in a matter of moments if I have all the specs in front of me. And from that starting point, then we can start to understand, well, which one's going to work better? What stem am I going to need to put on what bike to accomplish this position for this rider? Sometimes even within the same bike brand. So, you know, is a bike with a tall front end better than a bike with a low front end? Or do I, even after all these years of doing this, I was working with a rider who person walked in and I thought, oh, you're a 58. I've seen you a million times. I got him up on the Move and I was like, wow, you're actually a 56. I would have ordered the wrong bike. Once I got everything dialed in, it's like the 56 was the obvious choice. But when I was just looking at him, he looked like a 58. So that's one element of Retool, is being able to create any bike you want. And then you document that. You've got all your measurements documented, and that's all done digitally. It is what we call the Zen tool, which is a three-dimensional measuring device. It's amazing. We literally document the bike in 3D space. And once you have those measurements now, you can use those measurements to recreate that position on any other bike that you want.
Yeah, all the data is right there at your fingertips. I love that. So you're so right about making sure that I like counterclockwise for the situation that we're in right now. It makes total sense to me. And we have the time to do these services, to spend this time with the client. What about pricing, Scott? Can you give us any thoughts about, there's like basic sizing, full fit, a la carte service, any advice in this regard for retailers thinking about making a fit menu, I guess?
For sure. I like to keep it sort of simple. You get too many things on the menu and it gets pretty confusing and people don't know what to order. The other thing with the body, in terms of trying to break fitting down into a simpler versus a more complex fit, there's two things. One, I've had riders say, well, can you just do half a fit on me? And it's like, well, which half would you like? But the other thing I also know is most fitters, like, they don't stop. Like, the reality is when a fitter starts working and they go, oh, I can fix this one more thing, but it's not what they're paying for. They do it anyway. Most good fitters are pretty compassionate. So you don't want to have them giving their services away. So just charge for a fit. Whatever your fit is, full fit, one fit, it's a one fit and that's what you do. But there is a difference between fitting and sizing. And this kind of goes back to where we started, at the beginning where we was like, well, what's the definition of fitting? Back in the day, I'd say a lot of people thought they were fitting. They were actually just doing sizings for people. And a sizing is the basics. It's getting somebody up on their bike, hopefully in a trainer, not leaning against the wall, but up on their bike, doing a, old Italian heel back pedal test at the bottom pedal stroke. It works. It's like one of the wives' tales that works. It's one of the only ones, but that one does work. Okay, are we ballpark on the saddle? Do I drop a plumb bob or put a level, a 4 foot level up against their knee in the crank at 3 o'clock? Yeah, they're close. Should I flip the stem? Those are basic services, but I like the way that George Lee does this, speaking to my friend George, those services have value. So the way that we have always kind of taught this is your sizing, when you buy the bike, we're going to do that for you, but that is worth $100. That's a $100 service that we're giving you. And the way we're going to give you that is if you come back and we do a full fit for you, instead of the $450 that we would normally charge for that, we're going to charge you $350. And we're going to credit you that $100 towards that. Like now you notice that we're charging for the fit and we're charging a very fair sum for that. I'm not saying I'm going to give you $100 towards a $100 fit and give you the fit for free. That's not the point at all. But it's to introduce people, move them from sizing. This concept of sizing as a new rider, get all the basics handled. Introduce them to the idea of fit and what that does. It's different. And give them the opportunity to apply some of that credit towards that fit when they need it. That's a really good way to introduce people to the concept of fit, especially all these new riders. We want to get them set up to start from the beginning in a good position, but a sizing doesn't cover a lot of things, right? It's the basics.
Wow, I love that. I remember George touching on that. I was like, this is an excellent idea. And, you said $450. And, something I think our industry does too often is it gets stuck with one bike shop looking up another bike shop's service menu and pricing their fit the same because that shop is, and we all then end up at $99 basic tune-ups, right?
Right.
And lately we've been talking about service centers and how they're pricing their services and their tunes. They should be doing it. Smart retailers should be doing it based on the amount of time that it takes to really determine, what they need to charge. And I'm thinking about that in terms of pricing for a fit and how long is there like a, an industry standard of amount of time that a fit should take, Scott? Like, I'm putting you really on the hot seat. I didn't even tell you I was going to ask this.
No, that's totally fair. I get that question all the time. So is there such thing as too long of a fit? Absolutely. In fact, one of the tools that I teach people in class when I'm teaching fitting is how to end a fit. Because there are riders who they literally would love to be hanging out with you all day long. I've had that, and I understand retailers going, oh my God, I got my fitter. He's doing a 5 hour fit today. It's like, well, yeah, that shouldn't be happening. And there's techniques and ways around that, but that should not be happening. The average fit takes between 2 and 2.5 hours. Probably one of the single most important things to establish at the beginning of that fit is what's the goal. And I think this is where most retailers, this is how 5 hour fits happen. Nobody has agreed at the beginning of the fit through the interview process what the goal was. And so you never know when it's achieved. And that's how fits just go on and on and on. If you know why the person's there and you know what you're trying to solve for and you're able to, you know, get to that point, that's how you can end it. That's how you know you're done. I think that's the other thing. A lot of fitters, sometimes they don't know when they're finished. So establish why the person is there. What's the most important thing that that rider wants to get out of today's session? And do that. Once that's achieved, you're good. Don't solve for 1,000 other things that you may or may not be seeing, or the rider may not have even mentioned at that point. Now, if they come back and they still have issues, of course, we can address things down the road, but understand the scope of your fit and then charge accordingly. Now, the other thing that's super important is the experience. You know, and we talk about Whit Ellerman's, you know, new studio. It's beautiful. Like, I want to hang out there just to have coffee, you know? It's a great experience. And people now, especially now, but always, I mean, even with Signature Cycles back in New York, people are absolutely willing to pay for that experience because the experience is fun. It's rewarding. You learn about yourself and it's presented incredibly professionally, and people are willing and expect to pay for that. And that's what I learned from Clay Mankin all those years ago at City Cycle, was present yourself as a specialty retailer, not the bike shop. And people who are used to specialty retail, when they walk in, will recognize it and go, oh, this is why I pay this much for this experience. It's no different than buying a really nice watch, you know, or any other luxury good at that point. So provide an experience, make sure you deliver on it, and charge accordingly.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, like, you know, the 2-hour spa service. You can get up to a $400 ticket right there, you know, but you're going to pay it because it's luxury. It's about you, right? You're coming out feeling better. So
exactly. Yeah. And in a lot of cases, with that same, it's the same idea. You've got product that you may have left with. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, because I want to keep this feeling going, so I'm going to take X, Y, and Z home with me. It's very similar. I used to actually use this spa as an analogy in my selling fit lecture at SPCU.
Here it sounds like I understand. I've never been to a spa. Like, anyway. Okay. So Scott, I've been on several hundreds of retailers' websites. We just did our Bicycle Retailer Excellence Award, and I just feel like the fit message is really diluted on websites. Like, best case example for a retailer to let their customer know they offer fit services.
I agree. I think it's funny showing a fit on a website or showing a picture of fit. It doesn't do it justice, right? It is hard. Every one of our successful retailers that I've talked to, whether specialized or not, every successful retailer that I know that does fit, number one, most important thing is word of mouth. That reputation that you build. And like I said, it takes time. But what happens is when you start realizing there's people who are driving past a lot of other retailers to get to you to do a fit, you know, it's starting to spread, right? It's like, I used to work in Spokane, Washington, which is in Eastern Washington. And when I started having people come from Seattle to work with me to do a fit, I was like, wow, well, you guys have fitters in Seattle. That's a 4-hour drive. They're like, yeah, but we heard you were good. It's just word of mouth. The other way that you can foster that are events, fit events. People love to learn about this and have a question and answer session. So hosting a fit night just to basically talk about what a fit's about and what you should feel. I mean, today's riders, all the riders we're talking about today, they don't know that their knees aren't supposed to hurt when they ride. So we need to, you know, help set the expectation of what cycling should be and can be for them. So having an event or working with clubs is a way to do it. One of the things I used to do to get the word out for my shop was I, this is pre-COVID, so I know these are more challenging times, but when this happens again, find the local entry-level triathlon club. Find the entry-level local anything, but especially like in my day, working with triathletes. And one of the gyms that was in our area, they had a triathlon course where new riders were coming in and learning how to do their first triathlon. Most of those people had no idea how to choose a bike or that fit even existed. So I would go in and I got on their curriculum. Like, I'd come in and talk about bike fit for 30 minutes to their tri class. Usually there was 10 to 15 people in each class. I would get half of them in the shop for a fit, and I'd sell at least half of them their first bike. So I think that with fit, it's really being part of the community. Getting in there and being part of the community that you serve and letting them know what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, like, we don't know something until we know it. So just having these moments to talk about it, you know, what is Bike Fit? You know, have you ever been interested to learn more? We're going to have a meetup about it. I love this. This is a great idea. And it touches on that customer experience and how we can, you know, really help, you know, getting back to George, he said the rider's journey, right? We're helping people in their journey as a cyclist, and Fit services really play an integral role in elevating the whole bicycle retail experience, right? In that regard, Scott?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the customer experience or customer journey of, you know, where they first become aware of you, you know, that may be through fitting. They may hear about your services from someone else for the first time. They may be aware of your shop for the first time because of that. So Fit can absolutely affect just the awareness stage. It absolutely can and should affect the consideration stage, leading them towards that purchase phase where they're, you know, they've had a good experience in the shop, they've made that purchase, and then, you know, the sales and support and that part of that belonging of the community, you know, afterwards where you're following up with that rider, helping them make further equipment choices. You know, a customer is a loyal customer when they're calling you up and saying, "Hey, Scott, I want to buy a new pair of socks. Which ones should I get?" You know, I mean, it's like, well, the blue ones, I don't know. But they become so entrenched in your culture at that point that that's what they need from you. And then ultimately, of course, it circles around and now they're your biggest advocate and word of mouth. So Fit plays, you know, through all of that in elevating that customer experience. And again, you know, creating an experience around it is really where the magic happens, you know, making sure that that Fit experience is super cool. And it doesn't have to be exactly the same everywhere. It shouldn't be. It should represent the ethos of your store, but the quality and the experience needs to be there.
I feel like the words that are coming to mind are, you know, trust is a big one. And then the other thing, it's caring. And, you know, when you're making a change for someone or helping someone in a positive way that makes their experience more enjoyable, it shows you actually care. And that's missing from a lot of things these days, you know, trust and caring. And those two things boil down to lifelong customers. And Scott,
absolutely, Heather. I mean,
we're getting deep.
That's 100%.
We're getting so deep.
No, but it's so true. It's so true. You know, I mean, I could go in so many stories I have and people are going to get sick of them. But you know, I had this one customer, he was a triathlete, loved him to death. His name was Scott, also in New York. Did a Fit for him. We solved some problems. He was having some injury issues. He was doing half Ironman length. And he said, "Well, you know, do you do follow-ups?" And this is another good question, I think, for, you know, do you do follow-up fitting? I was like, "Yeah, we do follow-up fittings." He's like, "Well, how many?" I go, and our standard response at Signature was, "Within reason." You know, that was fine. So the next Friday before one of his races, he called me up. "Hey, Scott, can you look at me on my bike?" And I'm like, "Well, did you move anything?" "No, everything's the same." "Are you injured?" "No, I'm good." I'm like, "Well, what do you need me to look at?" He's like, "I just need you to make sure everything's fine." I'm like, "Okay." So he comes in, look at him, bless him on, and he's good to go. He has a good race, whatever. So this starts happening on a repeated basis. And finally, I was like, "Hey, Scott, remember that within reason thing?" "Yeah, we're there." And he's like, "I know." You know, and so he knew he's already pushing his luck with the follow-up thing. But, and he said, "Well, okay, so what would it take if you're going to charge me? How much do you have to charge me to come back?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, $200. And I just kind of pulled it out of my head. And he's like, "Oh, okay, that's fine. Can I pay you for like the next 5 races now?"
He needed you. You were part of his like magic.
It became part of his routine. And but ultimately too, he was still willing and understood that, you know, he was using my time and he was totally willing to pay for that. So I think the moral of the story, obviously, is treat your customers with all the respect in the world, but at the same point in time, charge accordingly. If the experience is worth it, they will pay for it. It's that simple.
Scott, I have to ask you now, any tips for follow-up fittings? You know,
For sure. One of the biggest things that I always teach to fitters is you can't cure everything with a bike fit. And I think the biggest thing with knowing it with follow-ups is sometimes working with a rider is eliminating potential problems that the bike may cause. So one of the biggest things that you have to know is when you have pretty much done most of those things, and if problems are still persisting, it's probably not the bike. So usually if there's a situation where you've addressed, trying to address the same problem, the original fit, and now you've done a follow-up, and if you've done a second follow-up to address the same problem, you're probably dealing with something that needs to be referred on. You either need more information, like you know, we're doing a pre-fit assessment in the retail environment, it's not the same as an x-ray or a CAT scan or whatever. You may need more information. My wife's a great example of that. We thought she had a leg length discrepancy, couldn't figure out why I couldn't fix it. And then we found out she had scoliosis in her lower back. There's no way I could have figured that out without an x-ray, right? So the thing is understanding when to stop and when to refer on. And then if you have more information, you might be able to make improvements. So like, you know, with my wife, now that I know what's going on, we can solve the problem. And in some cases, it's just not a bike fit thing at all. It's a physical therapy thing. It could be an injury that's completely out of the realm of anything that you're going to do with it on the bike. So I think that a couple follow-ups, especially if it's on the same problem. And then that also leads to the importance of building a referral network. Working with, I guarantee you that in every retailer that's listening right now, there are riders within their group who know great physical therapists or sports med docs. Connect with those people and build that network of referrals, because physical therapists, they also hate treating the same thing over and over and over and over again. So if they are working with a rider who they know the bike is the problem, they refer that person to you to make sure that the bike challenges are eliminated so that the work they do in the therapy studio actually works. So it's a symbiotic relationship that every retailer should build.
That's a great nugget of advice right there. You definitely want to make sure you have those referrals set up that you can suggest, because we can't fix everything, right? So important to know, you know, to have boundaries. So thank you. That was really great, Scott. Tip of advice there for retailers. You know, just flipping over to staff and training and SBCU. I remember back when we were able to, we would go out to Morgan Hill for training. If retailers are listening and they're like, all right, I'm ready to get involved with SBCU. How can they, you know, many of us don't have time as owners or managers to sit with our staff. What does that look like? How can retailers interact with SBCU and get their staff engaging?
Right now, there's kind of two levels of engagement that we're working on and hopefully soon to be more. Right now, SBCU.com for all things product, as well as a lot of the things that fall into kind of the like shop functions and, you know, services and working on turbo and the turbo handover and all of those types of classes. Those are all on SBCU.com now as modules. And the learning management system with LMS that runs that is called Absorb. And through Absorb, we can pull reports. Your field rep can pull reports. You as a manager in the shop can pull reports and see how people are progressing through the classes. You can create assignments or ask your staff to go through all those classes that are pertinent to the equipment and bikes that you sell in the store. So right now, that's pretty much 100% online on SBCU.com. For the fitting aspect of things, the way we're doing things now is, and I think will also be a way more things are done in the future, is kind of a hybrid. The way that I've been teaching fit now for the last year, which this is a funny one. If you told me I was going to be doing this 2 years ago, I'd have said you're out of your mind. But I actually figured out a way to make it work. So it's kind of fun. We do a hybrid type class where we spend some time together on Zoom to get the shop and the staff started and make sure they have everything they need to succeed with the fit education. They go through a really robust online education program. It's the most robust online education program SBCU offers, is actually Retool Level 1. And then we do another Zoom follow-up, which is usually 2.5 to 3 hours of going through the logic of fit, going through all of the navigation of Retool and understanding the data and the software and also the numbers, the ranges, and how they applied to that fit and how the fitter made their decisions and what the changes were. And I can really tell pretty clearly how well somebody has an understanding of the system. And ultimately, I think we're really as good, or in some cases even better, understanding in this situation than we were in the big classes that we would host at SBCU at Morgan Hill. And one of the big advantages of the way people are learning now is that instead of sending that one person, the one person to Morgan Hill to learn fit, in this world now, I'm working with 4 or 5 people from a shop. So coming back to that idea that having more than one fitter is valuable, this forum has allowed shops to have more people engaged, which is super cool.
I love that. So if a retailer listening wants to, you know, learn more about Retool, wants to learn more about those classes, would they, you know, contact their representative or is it someone on your team, Scott? Who do they reach out to if they want to put this, you know, forward?
Yeah, I mean, and this is, I think, another thing to just be clear is, you know, even though I work for Specialized in Retool, Retool is not Specialized exclusive. We have lots of retailers out there that we call IRCs, which are independent Retool centers. That are not Specialized dealers. So if that is of interest to you, those shops reach out directly to Retool specifically and start the conversation with Retool if they're interested in bringing Retool into that location. My side, the education side, I work with anybody right now who is either an IRC, so the independent, or a specialized IBD. And so the specialized IBDs are already, you know, signed up through SBC.com. The most important thing now for education is that you have to have all the stuff. So Retool has to be a commitment in your location to start with. And actually, I think that's a huge advantage because when we would do this in person in Morgan Hill, we would have people who are coming to class who were maybe either just being sent there by their owner because they felt like, oh, we're going to send somebody to go learn about fit, but they didn't have Retool. And then they come back and they don't have the system and they don't have the tools and they don't have the space. They're really ultimately not successful. So what's really cool now is everybody that's involved in the education program, they're already committed. And so my job is to just help them succeed.
Yeah, I remember that, like, you know, learning the fit and then not having all the stuff you needed. It was, yeah. So this is a great way. And I love that, you know, you clarified that anyone listening, no matter, you know, what brands you're working with, can, you know, have a relationship with Retool and get the education that we're talking about here.
Yeah. I mean, I think just to, you know, to clarify, you know, if there's shops that are out there that are, they're not specialized retailers and you're interested in Retool, we contact Retool. There is an application process. There's all the usual, you know, things that you would go through, you know, to become a retailer of anything. But it is not, I just want to be clear, it's not like you have to be a specialized retailer to have Retool.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So you're talking with so many retailers. You're in the thick of it. Any trends you're noticing in the industry that retailers should keep an eye on, you know, outside of the things we've been talking about, you know, so far today?
Well, I think that most of the trends that I'm seeing, I'm actually hearing from our retailers, so they probably are the ones who have told me this to begin with. What I'm seeing is, I think, again, coming back to that new rider trend, and we obviously have so many new riders. And I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing is that they're more aware. They're so much more aware. They've done more research. They're more aware of cycling and the equipment than I've seen riders be in the past. And so they have very high expectations for us as a business. They want to come to us and they know a lot. And just like anywhere else we go, we want to talk to people who know at least or more than we do so that we can learn. And so it's really our, I think, our obligation now to be absolutely the best we can be in the industry in terms of knowing our product, offering the best services we can. Because I think the trend that I'm seeing is that the new rider expects that. They expect us to be specialty retail at a very high level. And at the same point in time, they want us to be their experts and they want to have that relationship with us. So build that relationship and offer something that's just like really authentic and true to these people.
Yeah, we've been talking about shop culture. We've been talking about seamless experiences. Like, there's such great opportunity right now. But the people who are coming in our store are not the traditional cyclists. They're not the people who already, you know, have been riding for years. These people have no idea about the bicycle industry or what to expect. And we have a amazing opportunity to set that platform and meet their expectations. I'm going to hit you with a hard one, Scott. I think this is the last one I'll get you with today. If you own a bike store today, a retail bicycle store today, what is one thing that you would do to make your store unique?
Oh boy. Well, my answer will not be unique, but the way that everybody would do it, I think should be and would be unique if they really listen to their heart and soul. And I'm sure the shop owners that are out there, they're going, Scott doesn't own a shop. How is he going to tell me what to do? But here's what I think, guys. I mean, I think there is a reason that all of us got into this sport and into cycling or into this version of retail. There's a reason that you got into it. And my shop that I would own would absolutely reflect that reason as to why I love this sport and want to help people ride. So for me, for example, there's things that I love. The Paris-Roubaix story, obviously. Paris-Roubaix, in some way or form or fashion, which is the thing that absolutely to this day, I love. People who know me know that there is usually a Paris-Roubaix party at my house because Paris-Roubaix is what got me started in this whole crazy thing. I mean, who would guess that watching something on television for 5 minutes created a career? So I have to honor that, right? Even in some way. And what happens, there's people who don't know what that is. Like, they're never going to know what Paris-Roubaix is, but they're going to realize it was important to me. And then they're going to care. And when they care about something that's important to me, then they care about me as a business and something that they understand. It's like, oh yeah, this guy, Scott, he has this crazy story about this bike race. It's one of the things that why he opened a shop. It's the why. Why am I here? Don't be afraid to express to your customers why you're here. That's the thing that makes us all unique. I love Paris-Roubaix. I love coffee. And I love rock and roll. I guarantee you all three of those things would be part of my shop. The fact that the drummer from the Rolling Stones passed away today, there would be a memorial ride tomorrow. Those are the things that bring people to your store, right? When you say Charlie Watts and people go, oh, sorry, man, I know he was important to you, I'll be at that ride tomorrow, then you've created something.
I think that was the right question for you because I've got goosebumps right now, Scott. I've got goosebumps. All right. If anyone wants to contact you directly, how would someone, if they have additional questions from listening to our conversation today?
Yeah, sure. No problem. I mean, my email at Specialized is just scott2t.holz@specialized.com. And I'm happy to answer anything.
You are amazing. Thank you. I'm like super thankful for George for introducing us. And it's been just our emails back and forth and our banter, our casual banter. It's been great getting to know you. And I hope that we stay close and do maybe a follow-up. I think this is a listen and listen again. I can't thank you enough. And your support of the MBDA, your support of retailers, the industry. And yeah, thanks, Scott. You rock.
Oh, thanks, Heather. My pleasure. You know, I love doing this stuff. And like I said, my whole goal all along is how do we take this industry that I love and make it the best that it absolutely can be for all of us? So yeah, anything I can do to help with that, I'm happy to.
All right. So that is it. I invite you to connect with me. Come on Bicycle Retail Radio. Share your story with our listeners. There's lots of love for our industry. Lots of great webinars coming up. Those Monday member mingles, we'd love to see you. Check out the MBDA website for a full list of all the events coming up. If you'd like to support the show, don't forget to subscribe and share your favorite episode. And with this, we go.
This has been Bicycle Retail Radio by the National Bicycle Dealers Association. For more information on membership and member benefits, join us at nbda.com.